Jesus, Son of God, Creator, Sustainer, Judge, Author and Finisher. Jesus was a radical teacher when incarnated, walking this earth before His ultimate vicarious sacrifice at the cross. When He first sent out His disciples, listen to what He told them. He said, "Proclaim as you go, saying, 'The kingdom of heaven is at hand.' Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. You received without paying, go without pay. Acquire no gold or silver or copper for your belts, no bag for your journey, no two tunics, nor sandals, nor a staff, for the laborer deserves his food. In whatever town or village you enter, find out who is worthy in it, and stay there until you depart that town. As you enter the house, greet it. And if the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake the dust from your feet when you leave that house or that town." People are the reason He came. People are the reason He sent. People are a part of every one of our lives. Working with people, whether we are Jesus or one of the disciples or one of His followers today, it means we'll work with people. It means relationship. Today's message is entitled Radical Relationship. It's about you as a Christ follower who deals with people. Now, I often speak about that one essential vertical relationship. There's only one upward relationship that we need in life, and that's the one with God Himself through Jesus Christ, His only begotten Son. There's no other God. And then I speak about many horizontal relationships, the across-the-table relationships. And because of that, in today's message and what we'll take from the Sermon on the Mountainside today, I would say that we could subtitle this message, Radical Relationship, could subtitle it, Getting Along with People According to Jesus. Now, think of the people you deal with. Family, friends, enemies. Jesus had something to say about all of those things, but not all of those things in the Sermon on the Mountainside. When I speak about relationships, I'm speaking about others, what the Bible calls one another relationships. And today we'll get Jesus' radical teaching about radical relationships, just how we should treat other people, especially in contrast to the poor example of the scribes and the Pharisees. If you've noticed in Matthew 5 through 7, Jesus often says, you've heard it said, or it is written, or He gives a poor example and then gets to the root of the matter. He says, here's how it really is. And He does that to some extent today when He talks about relationships. So remember, when we're talking about relationships, we're talking about radical. I'm not talking about how to hold hands with the people beside you or how just to get along. I'm talking about getting along according to Jesus. What's at the root of a relationship? That's the fundamental relationship, the base relationship, the core relationship. So let's consider what Jesus said in His first sermon. Go with me to Matthew chapter 5, and as you're turning there, I just want to tell you where we're headed today. Today we'll consider three fundamental teachings about relationships. We're first going to revisit the truths of Christ when He taught us to love our enemies. I had a whole message on that called Radical Love, saying that's pretty radical. I mean, it's natural for us to love our own kids and our own family and our own parents. Even though it's hard, it's natural. And it's natural to try to love our neighbors, but it's unnatural to try to love our enemies. And Jesus said, get to it. That's the radical part of My kind of love. And then secondly, we'll move on to strive to understand this about dealing with people, relationships. We'll be talking about judgment. I want you to understand it is necessary that you judge every day. It's necessary. We use judgment about what's right or wrong, about what's good or bad, don't we? About what's healthy or unhealthy, what's meant for godly people or not meant for godly people, what's good for Christ-like character, what's not good for Christ-like character. So we use judgment every day, but we'll speak at a root level to say, how do we use judgment without using the tool of self-righteous judgment? How do we judge another humbly? That doesn't seem to fit, does it? Judge humbly. Stand beside them to turn them back to God. And then thirdly, today we'll consider Jesus' teaching on what has become come to be known as the golden rule. Do unto others before they do unto you. Is that right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So let's get busy, first of all, on loving your enemies. Matthew 5:43-47. Jesus said, "You've heard it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy." Now, the law doesn't say that, but the Pharisees have twisted around and said, you're supposed to hate your enemy. Jesus said, "You've heard that said, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be the sons of your Father who's in heaven, for He makes His sun to rise on the evil and the good, and He sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Not even the tax collectors do this. And if you only greet your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Don't even the Gentiles, the unbelievers, the uninformed, those who don't have the Word of God, don't they do that?" And so Jesus says, listen, I'm telling you, it goes further when we get to these root relationships. Now, you can listen to that whole message. Here's what I left you with that day. We had five goals in loving your enemies. You might want to write these down. And these were inspired by John Piper's teaching. Five goals in loving our enemies. First of all, to lead them to the truth. If you have an enemy, they need the Lord. Secondly, to pray for them every day. What a root call. What a fundamental call. What a core thing to do. Now, I think it's easy for us to say, well, I don't really have enemies. And remember, I spoke about there are personal enemies and then there are class enemies. Personal enemies are those who have personally offended you. But in the kingdom, if you're for all that Jesus said and did, and you're living the life, and they're not for it or they're not living it, by definition, they are your enemy because they're Christ's enemy. So you probably have a lot more enemies than you think. Pray for your enemies. Do something good for them. That's not psychological advice. That's exactly what Jesus said to do here. Okay. Give when they ask. Act in such a way that they must agree that you are a child of God. In the Sermon on the Mount, that's what Jesus said. He said, you do good unto your enemies. Don't give them. You see, if you go to their level, then they have a leg to stand on. If you stay on a Christ level, then they can never say, well, if she's a Christian, if he's a Christian, let Christ be in you. So understand here that those are the goals in loving our enemies. That's not new information if you attend North Street Church. And as I said, you can go back and listen to that whole message on love your enemies, radical love. Secondly, and we'll spend most of our time today, when it comes to relationships, Jesus taught us to be using judgment without becoming judgmental. And for that, we'll have to go to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew 7, beginning in the first verse. Judge not, that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use it, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will be able to see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Now, to make my point, before I delineate that point, I just want to ask you, did Jesus say, don't take the speck out of your brother's eye? No. He said, you notice a speck in your brother's eye, help him get it out. But before you do that, and, you know, we think, you know, a log in your own eye, that's such, you know, such a hyperbole, such a stretch in teaching. Who have you ever seen that has a tree in their eye? But, you know, we might think if you have a pencil stuck in your eye versus, you know, a piece of sawdust, I think it would be obvious I need to get help before I get this guy some help, before I can help him. And so just, you know, keep that in your mind, because we're going to go further. Matthew 7:1 has been used a lot by people. What does it say? Judge not, lest you be judged. To justify sin. Anytime the church takes a stand and calls somebody into accountability, man, Matthew 7:1 comes up. People quote that verse that they didn't even know they had it memorized. But it's out of context when it's used to justify sin, because sin is already judged. I don't have to judge whether or not your sin is sin. If it's sin, it's sin. It's already been judged. I just agree. I just confess with God when that occurs. Now keep in mind what I just said about taking the speck out of your brother's eye. I think there's a root thought. When we're dealing with people, when we're involved in relationships, you are going to want to be helping other people. That's just the way it is. When we're together and you love me and I love you and we're doing life together, and one of us has a need, it's just natural to help. So if I was at your house cutting firewood with you and I was running my chainsaw and my goggles fogged up and I took them off and all of a sudden I had this splinter in my eye, this chunk of sawdust in my eye, wouldn't you say, Pastor Bob, sit down, let me see if I can get it out? Right? Wouldn't you want to help? And that's the illustration that Jesus uses here, not chainsaws and cutting wood, but simply a guy has a speck in his eye. He needs help. I can't see my face. Can you see your face? Not without a mirror. See? But I can see your face. You can see mine. There's a time a person can help us when we can't help ourselves. Now keep that in balance. Don't judge, lest you be judged, and you'll be judged with the same judgment you use. When you see somebody with a problem, give them a hand, but make sure you check your life before you go using self-righteous judgment on them. But then help them out. Now listen to these verses, Matthew 18. You don't need to go here. They're written on the wall. Same teacher, same radical teacher. He says, if your brother sins against you, go and show him what? His fault. Did you have to use judgment to know whether or not your brother sinned against you? Or is there no such thing as sin against you? Judge not, lest you be judged. So just do what you want to do, because I can't judge you. Same teacher. Show him his fault between you and him alone. And if he listens to you, hey, you got the problem resolved. Specs out, both of you can see. But if he refuses to listen to you, if he does not listen, take two or three others along with you. See, take the surgeon and the surgeon's staff, that every charge may be established in the evidence of two or three witnesses. And if he refuses to listen to them, then tell it to the church. And I think in our day, we would take that to the leadership of the church. In first century, they may have yielded that to the apostles. And that may have been yielded to the whole congregation if that person refused to repent. That is the case in 1 Corinthians. A man who was having sexual relations with his stepmom, bragging about it, saying it was healthy and pure, and he was brought to judgment, and he was cast out of the church. In 2 Corinthians, we see he repented. Now, not many churches use church discipline today, because people are litigious and quick to go to the court and out of the church, or they just move down the street to the next church. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It is wrong. I'm not going to make a long speech about that, but that's how it works these days. But here it says, you know, you've offended, you judge that you're offended, go to the person. And if they won't hear you, if it's something that's essential, love that person enough to say, hey, you know, I'm going to get Joe and Fred, I want to go to lunch. Let's sit down and talk about this. See, I think as soon as we hear, get two or three, all of a sudden we shift into this formal mode, you know, that, okay, we're going to have a church meeting about this, and then, you know, and I think before it gets to that point, there's some resolution that can take place, but it's all about helping a brother. And he says, if he refuses to listen, tell it to the church. If he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. And I think a lot of people say, okay, well then we hate him. What's the radical teaching? Love your enemies. Then, you see, if he doesn't listen, you strive to lead him to the truth. You pray for him daily. You do something good for them and unto them. You give when they ask. And you act in such a way that they could never deny that you're a child of God. And Jesus said, truly I say to you, whatever shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. That's the keys to the kingdom, the authority of the church. And again he says, this is the reason I wanted to put this verse in here. In this context, Jesus said, if two or three of you are gathered in my name, okay, on earth about anything they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. And often, you know, we use that verse simply to say, well, not many people showed up. But Jesus said, I'll be with you, you know, if even two or three. But that's in a context of discipline, helping a brother, dealing with things on a spiritual level. For wherever two or three gathered, there I am among them. Now, I just want to ask you, putting those two verses at balance with one another, getting the speck out, bringing a brother to, you know, a right relationship with the Lord by going to Him first, having some other brothers or sisters with you, going to the church. Can this be done without using judgment? The answer is no, it cannot be done. You have to use judgment. Can this be done without using self-righteous judgment? Yes. And I believe that we need to live there to know we all have this tendency to be self-righteous and to judge other people. That's the tendency. That's why Jesus brought it up. It's not like the people at North Street aren't self-righteous and have self-righteous judgment. You do, and so do I. It's real easy to see your fault. I mean, I could have two or three of you stand up right now and tell you what I think's wrong with you. Who wants to go first? See? But if it's me with this pencil sticking out of my ear trying to get, you know, a piece of toast crumb out of your eye, I've got a problem. In fact, Jesus said when you need to do that, how do you do it first? Privately, right? Isn't that what He said? He said you go right to that person. Use your judgment. Go right to that person. So I want you to understand that when Jesus said, judge not lest you be judged, and then explained it, in the end he says, get the speck out of your brother's eye. Don't be using, see, it's not unmerciful, censorious, unkind, and unforgiving judgmentalism. That's what he says. Don't get caught up in that. But it's our tendency, isn't it? It's our tendency to take up another person's offense. It's our tendency to blow things right out of the water. One little thing. That's our nature. And then we want to justify self and condemn the other guy. But Jesus said, no, use judgment, but do it in this fashion, humble and trusting and loving. Is there a way to do that? Humble, trusting, loving judgment. They go together. There is a way to do that. And we're called to do that. Listen, one of these is spiritual truth and the other spiritual hypocrisy. That's what he was calling the scribes and the Pharisees such a bad example about. Remember, they thought they were so religious. He said, man, they get up to pray and they just make a show of prayer. And Jesus said, there's no eternal reward for them. They got their reward. You know, and if when I spoke about that, you might remember I said, public prayer is such a difficult and humbling thing, because about the time somebody comes to you and says, man, do I love the way you pray, it makes me not want to pray. Because I don't pray unto the people. I pray unto the Lord. And remember with the Pharisees, when it came time to fasting, you know, they made themselves look so drawn out and so weak, you know, and Jesus said, don't do that. He said, you just get up, wash your face like you normally do, comb your hair, you know, put on the clothes you always put on, and you don't need to tell anybody. Same with our giving. See, they made such a show. And along comes the same Pharisaical spirit in our lives that says, I got this guy now. I'm going to nail him. Be careful. Be careful. Now, I want to tell you. You see, if it's righteous, godly, humble judgment, sometimes, brother to brother, we need held accountable. Sometimes we need stood up straight and says, now, hear this. Okay, but not everybody can give everybody else a Dutch uncle talk. I would accept that from two or three people. Most people, I wouldn't accept that, but some people have the right that they've, I don't want to say earned, but we have that kind of relationship. If they said it, I would know what's coming as a friend sticks closer to the brother. I would know as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens iron. I would know that's their motivation and say, wow. You know, where if somebody didn't have the right, so to speak, tried to do that, I would, you know, brazen up and it would repel off my back in a self-defensive way. But realize, you know, sometimes that judgment comes across differently depending on the relationship. So I want you to know that it's not, you know, it's now about judgment, and the goal is not to justify self and condemn the other. And by the way, when we do that, when we set out to judge and help a brother and we end up being self-righteous, condemning about it, it's like throwing a boomerang. What's that boomerang designed to do? Come back. And Jesus said, listen, if you're going to go around judging like that, what's going to happen? That kind of judgment is going to be used on you. It's like, he says, don't do that. The goal is not to justify yourself and condemn the other person. The goal is a right standing before the Lord and people for both parties. That's the humble, trusting, loving judgment. So it can be motivated by you're being misunderstood and I want to help you. It can be motivated by you're wrong and I want to help you. It can be motivated by, you know, that's offensive and I want to help you. But the goal is to stand beside the person and face the Lord and the people, and both people are justified. You ever gone to court? You ever been charged with something? Even the magistrate office. See, you go and you explain yourself and the judge has the authority to say, not guilty. There's no offense here. There's no charge here. Because you were able to justify yourself. And the same is true here. You see, that's the deal. I'll stand beside you. Let's get this thing straightened out between you and the Lord and you and the people. And then, you see, you're okay. That's the goal in this radical relationship. And see, I can't even read that passage without people saying, oh, I don't want to do that. We ought to be doing it all the time. And in a sense, we do. We don't have to announce it. You know, I'm doing Matthew 5 on you, or Matthew 7 on you, or Matthew 18 on you. Here's what it says. Now I'm coming over to your house and we're going to make this right. You know, we should live it. Hebrews 12:14, here's what the Hebrew writer said. Make every effort to live in peace with all men and to be holy. Live peacefully with people and be holy before the Lord, for without holiness no one will see the Lord. That should be a goal for you and I, correct? A goal for me should be to live with peace, at peace with you, and stay holy before the Lord. Listen to what Paul said in Acts 24:16, justifying himself. He said, "So I always take pains to have a clear conscience toward both God and man." Should that be a goal of yours? Yes. And if we know our motivation and we're helping a brother and we're using judgment, it doesn't defile our conscience. But if we are, you know, just some kind of a holier-than-thou, you know, rule keeper, like a Pharisee or one of the scribes, then that comes against us. So I simply want to say, when approaching another, check your own life first. Secondly, have a right motivation. And thirdly, help your brother or your sister. And understand that this is our call. This is an optional. And the mature do this. This is ministry. See, this is Jesus' big kingdom announcement that says, in my kingdom, here's what it's going to be like. And just like the Pharisees and the scribes were the forerunners to the big announcement, we've taken Christ's principles in His kingdom and we've turned it into lots of things. I'm convinced, the further I go, lots of times people are committed to an ethic and a group of people who are committed to the same kind of ethic. You see, more than they're committed to Christ. And I'm not saying that as a criticism necessary. I'm saying that we all need to look within ourselves to say, am I more committed to my kind of thinking and people who think like me, who happen to be, you know, moral and happen to be, you know, for the Judeo-Christian ethic? Am I more committed to that effort among people than I am to Christ Himself? Just check it. So, thirdly then, let's talk about the golden rule. In Matthew 7:12, okay, detached from what we just read, last week's message fit in between here, and then Matthew 7:12 says, "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the fulfillment of the law and the prophets." That sums up the law and the prophets when it comes to horizontal relationships. Now, I understand other Eastern teachers and philosophers all had a similar statement, but it normally was this: don't do to others what you wouldn't want them to do to you. It was always negatively promoted to say, you know, just because, or just be careful out there, because you go kick this guy in the shin, that means you want him to kick you in the shin. Jesus said, no, the rule is, do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. And when we read that verse as a standalone verse, I think we take it as a kindergarten verse that says, you know, share your peanut butter sandwich and your banana at lunch because that's what you would want people to do to you. Give the guy the parking place because that's what you would want people to do unto you. But keeping all of this in context about these, you know, these relationships and about judgment and about, you know, the radical things we've been taught, I think we need to keep the kingdom mindset. So what I want to say, this golden rule is not unrelated to using good judgment. It is related. Galatians 6 says this, 1 to 4. It says, "Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Now keep watch on yourself, lest you be tempted." Isn't that sort of like what Jesus said? When you see somebody that's had an issue, you go and rescue him, but as you're rescuing, be careful because you might fall to the same temptation that guy, and you might fall harder. And so the golden rule is, listen, when a brother has fallen, you treat him how you'd want to be treated. It certainly applies there, and I think that's the better context. And according to Galatians 6, if you're caught in a sin, the spiritual should restore him with gentleness, watching over themselves unless they be tempted. And then Paul says in Galatians, now listen, bear one another's burdens and fulfill the law of Christ. The law is fulfilled when we love one another, when we're down and it hurts and we've fallen and we come alongside that person. We use judgment to decide, did they fall or did they not? I better get there. And we bear one another's burdens. Verse 3, for if anyone thinks he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. I think pastors are the hardest on other pastors. And when a pastor falls, most guys stand back and say, I saw that coming. That doesn't surprise me. Oh, that guy always thought he was better than everybody else, however it might be. I don't think it's just, you know, held back for pastors. I think all people are that way to some extent. But how sad when it says, when a brother falls, you run to him. We run away from him. You lift him up. We kick him. He says, but let each one of you test his own work. And then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. So I say, is this how you'd want to be treated if you fell? I would. If I was the guy who was in need, I would want to be treated how I would treat others. And so I treat others how I'd want to be treated. And if you fall, I'm not going to kick you. I'm going to stand beside you. I'm going to lift you up. I'm going to make you stand. Even if you fall again, I'm going to prop you up. That's what we're called to do. And so if that's how you want to be treated, what it says, kingdom thinking, then when others need help, when they fall, run to them. Treat them like you'd want to be treated. Now, trouble is, when we need help, we're not very apt to say, I need help. When we fall, typically we want to be left alone, right? We want to be isolated because we don't want people to know. At that point, we get defensive and we say, that's none of their business. Is it any of their business? According to the Bible, it is. We're here to bear one another's burdens. We who are mature, it's our assigned duty to go. But we're not apt to say, help me. So sometimes, you know, if it's me that needs help or you that needs help, when they come, you know, when the spiritual ambulance arrives, we're saying, no, I'm fine. You know, I'm going to help. Yes, you do. And sometimes you've got to fall a little further before you can say, okay, I'm ready. And some people are never ready. At least in one church, they just, you know, go start over somewhere else. And that's going to happen. As I was reading and rereading that scripture just this morning, I remembered something that happened to us a while back. Isaac was small enough to be strapped in a car seat when we traveled. And we were in Tennessee. And once in a while, if we're driving and I see the name of a NASCAR track within 10 miles or so, I'll stop just to see the track. And I've done that 3 or 4 times. And we were near Bristol. And I said, let's go see if, you know, their track's open, we could see it. And it was. But anyhow, we all got there. I think we had a van then, is that right? And I'm not sure who all was with us, but we all piled out of the car. But Isaac was still strapped in his car seat. And as we're about to close the doors, we hear this voice, somebody help the boy. And it was Isaac saying, somebody help the boy, you know. And so that's been sort of a funny thing in our house, because sometimes when somebody needs help, instead of saying help, we say, hey, somebody help the boy. And, you know, out of the mouth of babes. But I don't think spiritually we're very apt when we're falling to say, somebody help the boy. I've fallen. And so I just want you to think about this. Are you spiritual? Then you're called to use judgment, to exercise the golden rule, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I want you to take inventory. Who do you know that has fallen down Who do you know that has fallen away? Who do you know that's fallen out? Then somebody help the boy. Somebody go stand beside that man or that woman and say, I'm here. Restoring lives is the business of the church. And according to the way Jesus says it, it's proactive, not reactive. It's positive, not negative. See, we're naturally self-conscious, but we're called to be supernaturally to become others' conscience. I guess I used the word wrong conscience there, didn't I? In all situations, we would treat others how we want to be treated. And once again, in the golden rule, if we don't treat others how we want to be treated, there's a boomerang effect, isn't there? That comes back too. Because treating others requires judgment, and when we judge and don't treat the way Christ would treat them, then that spins right back. Well, I want to close. This radical teacher, author and finisher, creator, judge, sustainer. Lots of his teaching, right to the root, right to the throat, you see, if you were doing it the opposite. Remember this from Matthew 22. Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law? And he said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and your soul and your mind. And this is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. See, that was that one essential vertical relationship. The second is like it. All of these horizontal relationships. You shall love your neighbor as you love yourself. On these two commandments hang all of the law and the prophets. That sums it all up. Now remember, I started this by reading from Matthew chapter 10 some of the things that Jesus said, told His disciples, go out there, deal with people, cast out demons, heal them. When you go into a place and they receive you, stay. When you go into a place, use your judgment, and if you're not welcome there, shake the dust from your feet, move on. But keep up, you know, the ministry of the kingdom. Now, just try to get this. Listen to some other things He told them in that same commission of sending them out. This is radical information that has to do about relationships. Apply it. Jesus said, behold, I'm sending you out as a sheep among wolves. So be wise as serpents, as innocent as doves. He said, I'm sending you out amongst horizontal relationships, all kinds of people, your family, your friends, your enemies, the others, the one another's, the people you work with, the people in your community. You'll always be out there. But while you're out there, you're like what? Like a sheep in a pack of wolves. Do you remember that? Or are you so much a citizen of the wolves anymore, you don't understand, you're different. And I just think that is so amazing. We forget we're on commission from God to a lost and dying world. And see, we want some kind of peace with the world. We will not have peace with the world. The enmity started at the garden. See, and those who are of the darkness are not of the light. So kingdom people, when you go out there, you're like a sheep and a wolf. So be wise. Be wise as a serpent, but be as innocent as a dove. And Jesus went on to say to them, beware of men, for they'll deliver you over to the courts and they'll flog you in their synagogues. You'll be dragged before governors and kings for my sake to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. When they deliver you over, don't be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication. Right, Andy? Okay, he says, don't be anxious about what you'll speak or what you'll say, for what you are to say will be given to you at that hour. That played out in the apostles' lives. Do you know that? One hung himself, Judas, was replaced all the apostles but John were martyred for the faith. Fulfillment of what Jesus said directly to them. But it's still like that for us. We're not yet being arrested. But you see, when there's trouble out there, their horizontal relationships played out a little bit different, didn't they? Than what we're thinking of. Oh, I have an enemy. Because my neighbor, when he mows his grass, you know, he comes 4 inches over on my property. And I've told him 7 times to knock it off. 70 times 7, I've told him, yeah. I mean, we get offended about the stupidest things. We make specks out of things that don't exist. And Jesus said, here's the kingdom, folks. You're going to be dealing with people and they're going to reject what you say and they're going to reject you and they're going to be want to be done with you. Now you love them. You love them like I love them. You see. And then he said, listen, here's what's going to happen. Brother will deliver brother over to death. Father his child. Children will rise up against their parents and have them put to death. And you'll be hated by all for my name's sake. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. And then he went on and he said, don't think that I've come to bring peace to the earth. I've not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I've come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a person's enemies will be of his own household. Get that? A person's enemies will be of his own household. Whoever loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And I think we have always lived in a day where we're in love with ourselves first. And then family next. I'm pro-family, but I'm pro-God before I'm pro-family. That's the way it has to be. And you need to be there. Jesus didn't change the rules because of our sons and daughters' behaviors. And He didn't change the rules when I was a rebellious kid. You say, well, that's okay because that's Bob. It didn't happen. He says, whoever does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Who's taking up their cross? We are so wrapped up in getting ahead. And the next sporting event and the next vacation and the next thing we got to buy. Who thinks about carrying a cross for Jesus' sake and loving people like Jesus loved people? And treating people how you want to be treated when it comes to not being accepted in the world. Who's not accepted in the world? We're no different than the world. No wonder none of this makes sense to us. Because we've become so much like the world, you can't tell the difference. This morning I woke up early and I put on CNN just to see what the other side says. Because Fox doesn't have news on Sunday morning, and I'm not a big Fox fan like I used to be anyhow. They had, who's the judge on American Idol, or not American Idol, the talent show thing? Yeah, Pierce. He's a quasi-Catholic. And he was debating a guy that's a magician in Las Vegas. And I'm sorry, I don't know these people's names, but this guy's an atheist and just wrote a book called God No, and it went on, a good magician, a moral man, he doesn't drink or smoke, he never has. He said he might have spent $5 in gambling, this kind of thing. Loves his family, but he says, you know, he likes to hear about people's gods and so on, but he doesn't need God. Okay, so, you know, I watched these two fellows. But the reason I'm bringing this up, they showed part of this man's stage show. In a stage show, moral and clean, funny. But it looked like what a modern church building looks like. And I'm just saying. See, I sort of like the theater church where it's dark and cool and you're sort of anonymous because it is dark. And up front is the stage with the curtain behind. And most of the videos I watch of preachers that preach at churches like that, and it's not all undressed, but I mean they have jeans and a black t-shirt usually, sort of the men's v-neck kind of thing. But they all look the same. And typically they're not preaching the Bible. Typically they're giving people advice for everyday living. And please, don't think, I think that everybody that has a theater-style church, I mean, for me, you know, there's church styles and then theater styles, and some of them are good and some of them are bad in both camps. Okay, I'm not saying just go to a church that looks like a church building, you'll be okay. I'm simply saying, in order to win the world, we do everything to say, hey, come to the show. And it's more about you. See, getting some good advice for living. Go home and say, man, I really learned how to love my kids today. How about, man, am I a mess? And did I forget that God is God? You know what I learned today? I learned today that I've made my kids God. And I need to repent. Now that's when God's doing His work according to the Word, because that's what it says. If you love your mom or your dad or your son or your daughter more than me, then you're not mine. Such a good thing, the family. But we've lifted the family above the Trinity. And Jesus says, you've got to take up your cross. Your cross is not arthritis. Your cross is not an ulcer in your stomach. Your cross is not, you know, you're living on Social Security instead of retirement. That's not your cross. Look at the context with which He said it. He said, when you are dealing with people and they will reject you and it comes home to roost, the ones that should accept it the most are the ones that reject it the most. And when they're dragging you to court and you realize I'm but a sheep amongst wolves, then you're living it. Carry your cross, He said. And then He says this, whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Whoever finds his life will lose it. You think, man, I'm living it now. Jesus said, you better look. You better look. So I say this, when we are kingdom thinking, things become very clear when we're pasting the Scriptures against the way we are living or should be living. But when we are not kingdom thinking, we want to take these verses and turn them into some kind of self-help verses and or some kind of successful living verses or some kind of, you know, way to be a little better than the church down the street so we can get more people. That none of that is part of Jesus' teaching in the Sermon on the Mountainside or anything He taught. The offenses of our daily lives are quite different when we're applying the teaching of Christ to living a sacrificial life of ministry for Him. That's every follower is to live a sacrificial life of ministry for Him. I've said it for years. You are not the dumb sheep that have to show up every week for some kind of, you know, lesson that you already had 20 times and you're so stupid you don't know how to follow them and I'm smart enough to teach you how to follow them. No. That's not what it is. We are the administrators of the gospel of Jesus Christ in and out of the church, in the pulpit and out of the pulpit. You are to live a sacrificial life of ministry, bearing the cross of Christ everywhere you go, living a sacrificial life. And you know what we do with these verses? Judge not that you be judged. Oh, that guy just cut me off at the intersection. I'm not going to get mad. I'm not going to judge lest I be judged. What a poor application. Somebody took your seat this morning. Or you'll go to lunch and not get your demands met in a timely fashion by the waitress to say, oh, I've learned not to be offended. Huh. We don't understand. Okay, oh my. How we miss the mark. When we become such inward focused creates. You see, somehow we can't get past Lord, I thank you that I'm not like those other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like that tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give all the tithes that I get. That's where we live when we ought to be identical to the man who said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. So let us serve the Lord with a sacrificial kingdom commitment. So for today, I want to say, get radical in your relationships. Number one, specialize in loving your enemies. Number two, use faithful judgment to love others. Get that. Use faithful judgment to love others. And thirdly, make the golden rule your rule for living. Now, the next two Sundays, I'll be speaking about radical decision. And Jesus takes all these principles that we've learned all summer long, and He brings them down and says, listen, there's two doors, and only one leads to eternal life. And there's two paths, and only one's the right path. And there's two teachings out there, but only one is right teaching. And so for 2 weeks, next week I'm going to stay in the Gospels and talk about following Jesus. And then the last week I'll open up the revelation of the New Testament and Old Testament, but mostly the rest of the New Testament, to talk about what does it mean to make a commitment to Christ? What does it mean to follow Jesus? What does it mean to lay down your life to carry your cross? Because if we don't do that, then we could just say, well, Jesus is one of the good teachers of the world, which lots of people do with the Sermon on the Mount. What a piece of literature. But when he boils it down, he says, listen, there's only one way. And without it, you perish. So for the next 2 weeks, we'll talk about radical decision. That's radical. To say there's one way is radical. That's the root. That's the core. Let's pray. And today, Andy, what are we singing? Hear the Call of the Kingdom. What a good song for what we just said about having a kingdom mindset. I just want you to stay seated today, okay, when we sing. And I'm not going to ask our elders to come up. I want you to talk to Christ while we sing. To say, you know, Lord, I've got to love my enemies. I've got to define my enemies. And then love them. And I've got to not be so afraid to use judgment. But I need to work on not being judgmental. And Lord, starting now, I'm going to treat others how I want to be treated. And once again, it's not share your lollipop. It's like when somebody needs rescued, rescue them. Wouldn't you want to be rescued if you needed rescued? Then do unto others as you have them do unto you. That's more the context. So just stay there, sing, pray, let God work.